Blog Talk Radio.
The earliest arrived in America in the late 1800s. They are diverse, proud of their ethnicities, and patriotic U.S. citizens. They are Arab Americans, an important voice in the American community. But how much do you really know about who they are, where they're from, and how they're connected to the fabric of this country? Did you know that Steve Jobs, Danny Thomas, and Hoda Kotb of NBC's Today Show are all Arab Americans? What countries represent the origin of most Arab Americans, and what city has the largest concentration of Arab Americans outside of the Middle East? You can find out these answers and other fascinating facts on today's show. We're very excited that you've joined us today. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. I'm so glad that you've joined us. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you are listening to Focus on Empowerment. It's a beautiful day here in Boston. We finally got rid of all that ugly rain and cloudy weather, but we needed the rain, but we certainly want to just shoo away a lot of the cold weather that we've had and bring on the warmth permanently. I hope you are having a good day wherever you happen to be. I encourage you to go to my website that gives a lot of information about the Multicultural Symposium Series and the work that I do in multicultural issues and global diversity for a number of reasons. Number one, you'll be able to find information there about our upcoming cruise next year, giving you plenty of notice so that you will join us on the cultural cruise of the Caribbean on April 13th through the 20th. We're going to cruise three different islands, Puerto Rico, St. Martin's, and St. Kitts, with a wonderful, wonderful guide who will just give us lots of great information culturally, traditionally, about people in the Caribbean, the various islands, and certainly the islands that we're going to visit. That is Dr. Ada McKenzie. She is an up-and-coming leading expert from the Boston area, has her PhD, and now teaches at the College of the Bahamas. So she's going to be with us throughout the cruise, and she'll be giving us points and lectures, and then the rest of the time you're going to have just great fun. So go to the website. You can sign up for as little as $250. Sending the money directly to our travel agency, Garavanian Travel, north of Boston. And all the particulars are right there at www.mssconnect.com. That's mssconnect.com. Also, Connections Magazine will be coming out later on in the summer, and we're going to be giving you lots of information about that. It's going to also talk heavily about multicultural issues and diversity, and I'm excited that it's going to be launching later this month. And I'm even more excited because next month we are launching my second book called Best Practices, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Our Job, to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. It's going to be a practical guide for global diversity with really information that you can use right away to become a diversity champion. And actually, the organization of which our guest is representing today is in the book because we cover just a wide range of ethnicities and cultures in this important book. So we'll tell you more about that in the coming weeks. And then, of course, our multicultural conference will take place in October back at the University of Massachusetts, the Boston campus. So it's all things multicultural. We want you to be a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. Come on board and join us and help us to really build this worldwide connection of people from all walks of life just talking about these important issues, but most importantly, becoming diversity and multicultural champions in their own right. Well, today we're talking about an important topic. I wanted to talk about this because last month was Asian Pacific Heritage Month, and we had great guests on talking about East Asia, talking about India and that part of the world, but always left out are those from the Middle East. You really don't know where to stick them or where to place them, but they are extremely important in terms of the fabric of our country. I'm from Detroit originally, so I grew up with lots of people from Eastern Europe, from Poland, and definitely Lebanon and other parts of the Middle East. So that was my heritage. heritage, and they are very much a part of that part of the world. And we're going to talk more about the importance of Detroit. It's one of our quiz questions today. But joining us today, we were hoping that Warren David, who is the president of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, or otherwise known as ADC, was going to be our guest today. He's in an urgent meeting. We're hoping that he's going to be able to join us shortly. But we do have the legal director of that same organization, Abed Ayoub, who is joining us today. Abed, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that you're with us today. Tell us about that. You're from Detroit. You're from that great city of Dearborn. Why is Dearborn and why is Detroit so important when you look at those who are from the Middle East who are here and populated in the United States? Why is Detroit such a big draw, and why is it such an important city?
Sure. I think the reason Detroit was a big draw to begin with, which pulled the community here, I think is the same reasons for other immigrant communities, and that was the job opportunities that the big three represented and the auto industry represented there. So many of our community members, many of our ancestors came down to Dearborn in the Detroit area to get a job at the auto industry, would work at Ford or Chrysler, GM. And from there, the families just, you know, settled and started growing and relatives started coming. But now it's become the largest concentration of Arab Americans outside the Middle East. Some estimates have over 350,000 Arab Americans in the Metro Detroit area, most of them concentrated in Dearborn. And it's a great place. I mean, it's certainly something that we take pride in. It's something that we are very proud to call our city, proud to call our home.
Right.
And, I mean, why is Detroit important? Detroit important, I think, it's because it's the greatest city in America, as I always say. So... there's certainly a lot of opportunity.
I like that statement.
I know, but Detroit really did offer a lot of opportunity for many immigrant communities and many newer communities. So it's certainly a place we call home, and certainly a place that we definitely care about.
You know, also, I mentioned Dearborn, and if you're from Detroit, I'm 58, so if you are in my age category, I'm an African American. You know the other stories behind Dearborn. Certainly when I was growing up, no people of color lived in Dearborn. Dearborn was all white, and certainly if you were an African American, you may work in Dearborn. You may be a domestic or working for the factory or whatever in Dearborn, but you definitely did not live there. So through the years, things have definitely changed, and now such a large concentration of Arab Americans live in a city that historically has had a troubling past in terms of racism.
Yes, indeed. There is that other side of Metro Detroit, and it is a very diverse metropolitan area, but at the same time, it's also a very segregated metropolitan area. And we're just starting to break through those lines. We're just starting to see more integration and more communities living amongst each other. And it's definitely a very unfortunate thing. And as you said, Dearborn did have its dark days. There were days where racism was rampant and discrimination was rampant in that city. I mean, up until, the early 1980s or mid-1980s, mayoral candidates for the city of Dearborn were running on an anti-Arab platform, just to keep the immigrant problem out, as they quoted in their material. So there's certainly been a lot of changes over the past, couple decades. But there is still a long way to go, particularly in racial relations and with the communities working more amongst each other. There's certainly a long way to go.
Well, it's interesting because Dearborn had a long history with Mayor Hubbard, who was their mayor for many years, and unfortunately he perpetuated and, kept the city, kept the status quo in place so that it remained all white. I can imagine now, I'm sure he's probably dead and gone. He's probably turning over in his grave when he sees that, the city is quite diverse. There are black people who live in Dearborn now, and certainly a very large Arab population, Arab American population. So it's a very different city, and it should be. How are race relations between Arab Americans and African Americans in greater Detroit, a bit?
I'm not going to say that they're the greatest. There's certainly room for improvement. There's certainly room for improvement for the race relations between the two communities. There's a lot of misunderstanding between the communities. There's a lot of there was a lot of tension, in past generations for different problems, whether it'd be, the sale of the typical problem where the Arab businesses are in the African-American neighborhoods, not giving back to the neighborhood, selling the liquor, selling the alcohol, and really not caring about the city. And, you know, the African-American community was pretty upset, and they had the right to be about that. So it started on the level of how could we have our business owners understand that this is, you know, if your business is in this area, treat it as if it's your home. Hire members from the, you know, hire individuals from the African American community, engage in programs with the schools, start training future African American business leaders. So it began on the premise of business, and now it's steadily improving. We're building trust, we're building better dialogue, not only in the Metro Detroit area, but I think the communities, both communities are across the country. I know we're doing similar initiatives in Washington, D.C. and in the Chicago area. So it's certainly improving. It's a lot better than, you know, where it was maybe 20 years ago. But there is still room to go, and there's some work to be done between on that,
you know,
issue.
I must say, I've lived in Boston 20 years, and obviously my roots are in Detroit, but I rarely, if any, any time hear any tension, hear about any cultural conflict between the African-American and the Arab-American community, given the fact that you guys have lived side by side for so many decades.
Yep.
So from the outside, you know, we don't hear anything. And I'm glad and certainly pleased that,
yep,
things are continuing to improve internally. Now, let's broaden this and just talk about the country at large, because we do have people literally listening all over the United States and certainly outside of the country as well.
Sure.
What is the largest country or the largest two countries that represent the makeup of the Arab American community?
I would say the Lebanese community and the Syrian community are the two largest country. A number of Syrian Americans first arrived here in the late 1800s, shortly followed by Lebanese Americans. So they've been here for generations. And then, so it's those are certainly the two largest populations.
And that's your ethnic background, too, personally.
Yes, personally I am. I'm half Lebanese and half Syrian, so I got a mix of the two.
And I believe Warren David is also the president of your organization, also is of the same ethnic background.
Yes, he is. So it's a very common combination.
Right. And if, again, for those of you who are listening, we're doing a little geography lesson. This is important. Toledo, Ohio has a very large and strong Lebanese population and has for quite a number of years. And the late Danny Thomas, who was a great entertainer, father of Marlo Thomas, was of Lebanese descent as well.
Correct.
Yes, and right. Steve Jobs, unfortunately, who passed away last year, his father was of Syrian descent. So, again, the contributions are quite amazing, quite extraordinary. So tell
Indeed.
Us more about your organization, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee.
Sure. ADC is a national nonprofit civil rights organization. We were founded in 1980 by a former U.S. Senator, James Oberst. And it was found to combat discrimination, combat profiling, and provide legal services to those that have been discriminated against or profiled. So we're kind of like the Arab American community's NAACP. That's kind of the work we do. We combat stereotypes. We try to make sure that there's no negative perception of the community in the media or in the news. And as you can imagine, we've had a busy time over the past decade. Because of the backlash from 9/11 and the recent backlash of, you know, rise of anti-Arab, anti-sentiment over the past few years, especially in political campaigns and in different, different arenas. So it's we certainly have a lot on our plate. And just as any nonprofit, I think we grow and we mature as the time goes on and try to adapt our needs to what the community needs and what the community is looking for.
Do you have a particular issue or opportunity that that you focus on when you're working with your members and those in the various Arab American communities across the country?
Sure. I could tell you the two of the biggest issues, and one of the biggest issues within the past year has been our refocus and reemphasis on coalition building. Because as mentioned before, with working with the African American community, and I'm glad you brought up the point that you didn't hear of any of the problems,
right.
Because the one thing we did do was keep them internal. And, you know, understand that we are one big family, regardless of skin color, regardless of race. We are a big family, and our problems, you know, need to be dealt with. But we have reemphasized our commitment to coalition building, tried to form some strong bonds with historically black colleges, with the, you know, African-American civil rights organizations, Hispanic-American organization. So that's been something we've been working on over the past year. And, of course, the second end of it is combating the negative stereotypes that we're finding on the campaign trail. Because it seems these days anybody that wants to run for public office, is, you know, they come out, you know, anti-Arab or against Islam or against Sharia law, then they're going to, you know, have a hell of a fundraising period and garner some good support. So we're really trying to combat the politicization of the community. And we think that's very important for us to tackle right now. If we fail to do so, we are setting a precedent moving forward.
Well, I think that's important. I think any nonprofit organization in this day and age, especially when you're national, you have to build alliances and coalitions across ethnicities. That's just, I mean, I now belong to a large Latino organization, Alpha, because I think it's important to be a part of that group. And I probably join your organization as well. So the coalition piece is extremely important. But I think it's also important for our listeners to understand that in this country, Arab Americans, 63% of Arab Americans are Christian. 63% are Christian. I'll actually give you the statistics for those who are interested. 63%, 35% Catholic, 18% Orthodox, that's Eastern Orthodox or Oriental Orthodox, 10% Protestant, and 24% Muslim, and then 13% other, including Jewish or no affiliation. So, again, we get our facts so wrong because, and I talk about this a lot in my new book that's coming up, I want people to make their own minds up and do your own research so you can get your own facts together. And it's just important to realize. And again, growing up in my community, the Middle Easterners, the Arab Americans who were there, most of them were Christian. And most people don't understand that. So I think a lot of truth-telling can go a long way when you're trying to sort of change the paradigm that unfortunately has gotten way out of hand in this country.
You're absolutely right. I'm glad you did brought up that point. There is a lot of misinformation out there. Over 60% of the community, of the Arab community, is, you know, Christian. Also within the Muslim American community, a majority of Muslim Americans in this country are African American, followed by South Asian, followed by Arab American. So, again, I think it's something near 50% of Muslims in this country are African American Muslims. So that's there's a lot of misinformation out there on the two communities respectively, and particularly the Arab American community. This community has been here for generations. It's highly successful. We have high graduation rates, one of the highest college graduation rates amongst minorities, you know, very successful in different arenas, but still we are facing discrimination that's limiting us in what we can do and the opportunities available to us.
And it really is unfortunate because, you know, I know one or two extremely successful businessmen in this country and certainly in the field that I work in speaking and training. And the one gentleman who is now college president at High Point University in North Carolina, he is of Lebanese descent. So when I look at a lot of the success stories, entrepreneurialists, so you can't help but look at Arab Americans. They're very successful.
Indeed, and it's, I guess it's in our blood to have the entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, it's in different fields, too. It's in sciences, the math, development, business, across the board. I mean, individuals would be working with somebody that's Arab American they may not even know.
Right.
So we are a part of the mosaic that makes up this country.
Right. And again, you can go to my blog. I actually have a couple of graphs there that can give you some very pertinent information about the Arab American community. You can go to tellcarole.com, TellCarole.com, and then go to Carol's blog, and you can read about the Arab American community and find out more. It's really, I think, very important. So tell us about the conference that you have coming up later on this month a bit.
Sure. At the end of the month, we have our annual convention here in Washington, D.C., at the Capitol Hill Hyatt. We've been doing it for over three decades now. It's a four-day conference where we give the community a chance to hear from key government officials and community leaders, as well as political leaders and academics on issues that matter most. And this year, we are taking a close look at the upcoming elections and, you know, the impact of the elections on policy as we move forward. So we have workshops by the Department of Education, Department of Treasury, Small Business Administration. We also have representatives from the White House as well as other government agencies. So we are hoping to have a very good and cohesive convention that's going to result in some very productive material as we move forward. So it's June 21 through the 24th in Washington, D.C. And again, it's open to everyone, Arab and non-Arab. I think the issues we'll be talking about address us all as Americans. So it's certainly going to be a very good event. We certainly hope you know some of your listeners are able to join us.
Great. And I believe you also have Wade Henderson and Ben Jealous. Ben Jealous with the NAACP, Wade Henderson with his own civil rights organization are also part of your lineup, your keynote lineup with your upcoming conference.
Yes, indeed. Ben Jealous will be giving a great lecture on the upcoming elections and, you know, how the role minorities are going to have in the voting. Wade Henderson, I think his civil rights track record is tremendous and speaks for itself. So he'll be also keynoting our Saturday lunch. Our Friday civil rights luncheon will be keynoted by Sheriff Baca from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. We also have a dinner at the U.S. Senate on Thursday evening. We expect a number of key U.S. senators and representatives to attend as well. And finally, we have a Saturday night gala, which should have a very good keynote speaker we'll be announcing within the next week or so.
Sounds like a great lineup. It really is. Now, if Warren David has joined us, if you can just press 1 on your keypad, that will allow me to let you to come into the conversation. I'm not sure if he's still in a meeting, but we certainly are enjoying the conversation that we have with our legal director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, Abed Ayoub. In closing, what is the total population of the Arab American community in the United States?
That's the million-dollar question. Because of the fact we're not counted on census, so there's a number of different estimates floating out there. Some estimates have us as low as 4 million and as high as 7 million. Mm-hmm. So that's a big margin of error. But, you know, we tend to think there's between, you know, 6 and 7 million Arab Americans currently in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
And again, with the largest concentration, of course, being in the Metro Detroit area.
Right, right. And what would you want our listeners to know? First of all, give us your website, and then tell us how our listeners can begin to sort of reframe their thoughts away from some of the violence that they see in other parts of the world that unfortunately deal with Arabs, with what they see that's taking place in Syria right now, which is totally unfortunate and we're in a very, very tragic.
Yeah.
And some of the other scenes that we see on television or certainly talk about with talk shows or read about with blogs, how can that be changed or how can those images be muted when you really look at the strength of the Arab American population here in the United States? A bit.
Sure. I think the number one thing is for your listeners and for everybody just to understand that Arab Americans are just like, you know, everyone else in this country. We have the same likes. We have the same taste. We have the same lifestyle. So we are part of America. We're part of the social fabric. We're part of the mosaic of this country. I think, that, you know, we're not as, you know, some movies or some media personalities try to depict us. We're not monsters. We're not evil, you know, these evil people here to invade a country. We're Americans just like everybody else, and we have the same, you know, love for this country and the same love for humanity as everybody else. And, of course, what's happening overseas is very tragic. And, you know, keep in mind that what's happening overseas is resulting from these people's want and demand for freedom, their demand for democracy and,
right,
you know, basic universal human rights. And that's what our ancestors here and the civil rights movements prior in this country from generations ago fought for. So, you know, their time is coming for equality and for justice over there. And, you know, we could do our part over here by supporting their cause and understanding, you know, that what they're dying for and what they're fighting for is, you know, in line with what our ancestors here fought died for as well.
And that certainly involves those who are part of the Arab Spring. We've been watching that certainly for now almost 2 years, an amazing revolution and transformation that's taking place. And then the rights of the Palestinian people, what ultimately is going to happen with them is going to have a lot to do with the United States. It's going to have a lot to do with the world and how some kind of peaceful resolution comes between those of Israel and those of Palestine.
Indeed, indeed, and that is one of the key issues right now in the region. We hope there is a peaceful issue and a peaceful resolution, because you're absolutely right. America will play a big role in, you know, how that is decided, and the next 6 months to a year in that region will help shape, you know, the framework of the issues the world is going to be facing over the next generation or so. So it's a crucial time, and it's crucial. What's happening over there is definitely crucial matters in how they're going to impact us.
Absolutely. For more information about the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, go to their website, www.ad, as in David, C, as in committee, .org, ADC.org. They have some great information there. You can learn an awful lot and hopefully improve the knowledge base that most Americans have about the Arab American community, which is pretty limited. Again, this show, the work that I do is to stretch people and to help them to expand so that they have a better knowledge base about what's taking place in the world. Abed Ayoub, thank you very much for being a guest on my program. I wish you, Warren David, your organization, and certainly your conference the very best going forward, and we'll definitely stay in touch, and you're in my book, so your organization is listed in my book. I ask people to volunteer. You have a whole section about volunteering, so I'm hoping people will read the book and will sign up accordingly.
Excellent. I appreciate it, and thank you for having us on.
Thank you so much. Take care now.
Take care.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And for our friends who are continuing to listen to the show, I'm going to continue to be a champion just because I think it's so important to be a champion. There's so much misinformation. There's going to be so much more misinformation that will take place between now and November, the first Tuesday of November, when we have our presidential elections here in the United States. And between now and then, there's going to be a lot of stuff hashed, pro and con, a lot of misinformation that's going to be really up to you to take the plunge and find out for yourself about what's taking place. I actually found this organization by doing an extensive web search. And as a result of that, I thought it was a very great organization, put them in my book, had a wonderful conversation with Warren David, who unfortunately was not able to join us today because of business, but Abed Ayoub did a great job. But now that's a new connection, and the collaboration piece is just so critical. I'm going to also ask you, and I've talked about this in my book too, again, 63% of Arab Americans are Christian, so there are lots of Christian churches, Orthodox, non-Orthodox churches, where you can go in the respective communities and learn more about their cultures. They have restaurants all over the country. They have great food. I would encourage you to partake. And then for those who are Muslim, 24% of Arab Americans in this country are Muslim, I would encourage you to find a mosque or a cultural center in your area. I actually talk about that in my book. You are welcome to go. I don't know of any mosque that would not have any person to come in and worship with them. If it is during their prayer time and their worship experience, women have to have their heads covered, and typically they have scarves there for you. It's not frightening. It is a wonderful experience. And again, I think it's incumbent upon those who are, I call, diversity champions, to really take that leap and do what you can to learn about the various cultures around, certainly our country here in the United States and around the world. It is just that important. We are intertwined. We are connected to each other through technology, through bloodlines, through the work that we do, through our organizations. And the more we know, the more you know about your neighbors who may be like you or different than you, the better your neighborhood and your community will be. And I just say hats off to the Arab American community. They've been here a long time. They mean an awful lot to our society. Who would have thought that Apple Computer would be doing what it's doing had it not been for Steve Jobs, whose father was from Syria? I hope you have a great week, a great weekend. We'll be back next week with another exciting show. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and remember, empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. We'll see you next week.